Chapter 179. I stayed awake until 3:47. That was the last time I looked at my watch before I fell asleep. It has a luminous face and lights up if you press a button, so I could read it in the dark. I was cold, and I was frightened Father might come out and find me, but I felt safer in the garden because I was hidden. I looked at the sky a lot. I like looking up at the sky in the garden at night. In summer, I sometimes come outside at night with my torch and my planisphere, which is two circles of plastic with a pin through the middle. And on the bottom is a map of the sky, and on top is an aperture, which is an opening shaped in a parabola, and you turn it round to see a map of the sky that you can see on that day of the year from the latitude 51.5 degrees north, which is the latitude that Swindon is on, because the largest bit of the sky is always on the other side of the earth. And when you look at the sky, you know you're looking at stars which are hundreds and thousands of light years away from you. And some of the stars don't even exist anymore, because their light has taken so long to get to us that they're already dead, or they've exploded and collapsed into red dwarfs. And that makes you seem very small. And if you have difficult things in your life, it's nice to think that they're what is called negligible, which means that they're so small you don't have to take them into account when you're calculating something. I didn't sleep very well because of the cold and because the ground was very bumpy and pointy underneath me and because Toby was scratching in his cage a lot. But when I woke up properly, it was dawn and the sky was all orange and blue and purple and I could hear birds singing, which is called the dawn chorus. And I stayed where I was for another 2 hours and 32 minutes and then I heard Father come into the garden and call out, "Christopher! Christopher!" So I turned round, and I found an old plastic sack covered in mud that used to have fertilizer in it, and I squeezed myself and Toby's cage and my special food box into the corner between the wall of the shed and the fence and the rainwater tub, and I covered myself with the fertilizer sack. And then I heard Father coming down the garden, and I took my Swiss Army knife out of my pocket and got out the saw blade and held it in case he found us. And I heard him open the door of the shed and look inside. Then I heard him say, "Shit." And then I heard his footsteps in the bushes round the side of the shed, and my heart was beating really fast, and I could feel the feeling like a balloon inside my chest again. And I think he might have looked round the back of the shed, but I couldn't see because I was hiding. But he didn't see me because I heard him walking back up the garden again. Then I stayed still, and I looked at my watch, and I stayed still for 27 minutes. And then I heard Father start the engine of his van. I knew it was his van, because I heard it very often, and it was nearby. And I knew it wasn't any of the neighbours' cars, because the people who take drugs have a Volkswagen camper van, and Mr. Thompson, who lives at number 40, has a Vauxhall Cavalier, and the people who live at number 34 have a Peugeot, and they all sound different. And when I heard him drive away from the house, I knew it would be safe to come out. And then I had to decide what to do, because I couldn't live in the house with Father anymore, because it was dangerous. So I made a decision. I decided that I would go and knock on Mrs. Shear's door, and I would go and live with her, because I knew her and she wasn't a stranger, and I had stayed in her house before when there was a power cut on our side of the street. And this time she wouldn't tell me to go away, because I'd be able to tell her who had killed Wellington, and that way she would know that I was a friend. And also, she would understand why I couldn't live with Father anymore. I took the licorice laces and the pink wafer biscuit and the last clementine out of my special food box and put them in my pocket, and hid the special food box under the fertilizer bag. Then I picked up Toby's cage and my extra coat, and I climbed out from behind the shed. I walked up the garden and down the side of the house. I undid the bolt in the garden door and walked out in front of the house. There was no one in the street, so I crossed and walked up the drive to Mrs. Shear's house and knocked on the door and waited and worked out what I was going to say when she opened the door. But she didn't come to the door, so I knocked again. Then I turned round and saw some people walking down the street, and I was frightened again because it was two of the people who take drugs in the house next door. So I grabbed Toby's cage and went round the side of Mrs. Shear's house and sat down behind the dustbin so they couldn't see me. And then I had to work out what to do. And I did this by thinking of all the things I could do and deciding whether they were the right decision or not. I decided that I couldn't go home again. And I decided that I couldn't go and live with Siobhan, because she couldn't look after me when school was closed, because she was a teacher and not a friend or a member of my family. And I decided that I couldn't go and live with Uncle Terry, because he lived in Sunderland, and I didn't know how to get to Sunderland, and I didn't like Uncle Terry, because he smoked cigarettes and stroked my hair. And I decided I couldn't go and live with Mrs. Alexander, because she wasn't a friend or a member of my family, even if she had a dog, because I couldn't stay overnight in the house or use her toilet because she had used it and she was a stranger. And then I thought that I could go and live with Mother, because she was my family, and I knew where she lived because I could remember the address from the letters, which was 451C Chapter Road, London, NW25NG, except that she lived in London, and I'd never been to London before. I'd only been to Dover to go to France, and to Sunderland to visit Uncle Terry, and to Manchester to visit Aunt Ruth, who had cancer, except she didn't have cancer when I was there. And I had never been anywhere, apart from the shop at the end of the road, on my own. And the thought of going somewhere on my own was frightening. But then I thought about going home again, or staying where I was, or hiding in the garden every night, and Father finding me. And that made me feel even more frightened. And when I thought about that, I felt like I was going to be sick again, like I did the night before. And then I realized that there was nothing I could do which felt safe. And I made a picture in my head of all the possibilities. 1. Living with Mrs. Shears. 2. Going home. 3. Staying in the garden. 4. Going to live with Uncle Terry. 5. Going to live with Mother. And then I imagined crossing out all the possibilities which were impossible, which is like in a maths exam, when you look at all the questions and you decide which ones you're going to do and which ones you're not going to do, and you cross out all the ones which you're not going to do because then your decision is final and you can't change your mind. Which meant that I had to go to London to live with Mother. And I could do it by going on a train, because I knew all about trains from the train set, how you looked at the timetable and went to the station and bought a ticket and looked at the departure board to see if your train was on time, and then you went to the right platform and got on board. And I would go from Swindon Station, where Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson stop for lunch when they're on their way to Ross from Paddington in the Boscombe Valley mystery.
This ends Disc 3.